Hey guys, welcome back to the channel. I'm Mark Headley, and I'm joined here today by my lovely wife, Claire Headley.
Hello, hello. Good evening. Happy New Year to everybody, since this is, I think, our first live of the new year.
It's our first live together. I actually did a live Mitch yesterday, but yes, this is the first Scientology Stories episode of this year.
Yes.
And if you're just joining us, let us know where you're coming from. We like to just kind of make sure the stream is set and everything's good here. I'll pull up the comments there to see if it looks like we're doing pretty good. It doesn't looks like they can hear us. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I can hear you. Perfect.
Don't hear any buzz.
No, I don't hear any buzz. I don't hear everything. Looks good. Sounds good. Today, we are going to cover an escape story from the International Headquarters of Scientology in Gilman Hot Springs, California. And in order to do so, we're going to use some graphic aids. But before we get into that, let's just pull up a few little things, see where everybody's coming in from here today. We've got somebody from Kelly from Toledo, Ohio. Hello.
Hi, Kelly.
Poodle bone from New York. We got somebody from Finland.
Nice.
Auntie Hayu. We got Kathy from Alberta, Canada. Eve Grinstead from Pittsburgh. Mark's not sounding like a robot, so that's a plus.
Yay.
Hello from cold Montana, Japan of Green Gables. Hello from Gilman Hot Springs, New Brunswick, Canada.
Nice. Always good to see Japan of Green Gables here.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got people. Oh, somebody from Chicago. Very good. Very good. Well, I think we're pretty set here. I think we're good. Is there anything that you wanted to say before we get started?
Well, no, just that we should mention that yesterday was your 19th year anniversary.
Yes, 19 years ago yesterday was the day I escaped from the International Headquarters of Scientology in Gilman Hot Springs. It was January 4th, 2005. That was the day that I GTFO'd right on out of there.
Exactly. And the rest is history.
Yes.
But yeah, that's why when we were talking, I thought, you know what? We should commemorate this. Yes, it's well covered in your book, but you and I have never talked about it on any forum, actually.
I don't think I've ever really.
In any show, in anything we've ever done, you and I have never had this conversation.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. I don't even think I've really explained all the different ins and outs of it, besides in the book, in my book, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. I do tell the actual book starts with this and ends with this. In a roundabout way, it kind of starts with the escape and then it circles back to the whole setup and the history. And then it ends with the escape and then what happened after that. So, I think we're good. Do you want to pull it up? You want me to do the thing here?
Let's do the driving.
Okay, good. So we've got this layout here. There we go. So the, what's that?
I said skadoosh.
Skadoosh. So this is the United States. This is where the international headquarters is located. You can see over there on the far side where the West Coast is. You can see where it says California. And then where it says Los Angeles, let me see if I can do it this way. There you go. So the Scientology base is about 2 hours outside of Los Angeles. It's east of Los Angeles, about 2 hours east of that. And let me see if this is going to work the way I planned it here. It should zoom in to the property. And if you hear any little clicking, that's me clicking all these little slides and everything. So, yeah, so there you go. So that is Gilman Hot Springs. Wherever you see green, that's essentially, that is Gilman Hot Springs. It's about 550 acres, depending on who you talk to. And let's just pull up some of the main landmarks here. You've got David Miscavige's office there. What's it called? Building 50.
Yep.
You've got where David Miscavige, where he lived in the Lower Villas and Religious Technology Center. Mm-hmm. Those two offices above that are both, all three of those little buildings right next to each other in the middle there, where it says David Miscavige birthing, next to that swimming pool, that those are all Religious Technology Center buildings. And then the office above is an RTC building, building 50. And then that big mansion in the middle of the screen there where all the grass is and everything, that's L. Ron Hubbard's mansion that they built for him, 20 years, after he was long gone. You can see the hole over there, that set of double wide trailers. That's where the infamous hole was, where Scientology executives were locked up by David Miscavige. Then in the middle, you can see that's the main security booth. And then, that's sort of, some of the main attractions there at the INT base.
Yeah, and then Rebecca asked if we got to do a lot of swimming and sunbathing.
I think in the 15 years I was there, I think I went in that pool maybe two or three times. And one of them was when we would get thrown overboard. In the Sea Org, they have a ritual called overboard. If you do something you're not supposed to do, they throw you overboard. And when the Sea Organization was at sea, they would throw you over the side of the ship into the ocean. And so because we were no longer at sea, they would have to throw us in. Actually, let me see if I can move down a little bit. There's a lake down here. Yeah, there it is. That lake, brown, mucky, muddy, murky lake. We would get thrown. You can see there's a tree in the middle of it. And you'd walk across this little path into where that big tree is. And then they would just push you into the muddy water of the lake. And then I think a bunch of people ended up getting sick. And so they had to go back to throwing people in at the swimming pool for a little while. You get thrown in, and that's where I got thrown overboard. I can't remember ever being thrown overboard in the lake, but I definitely was thrown overboard at the pool because David Miscavige was the one who threw us overboard.
I was thrown overboard into that lake at least two or three times.
When you were in Golden Era Productions?
Yeah. Yep.
Before you went to Religious Technology Center.
Yep. And then you had to do the walk of shame because you weren't allowed to take any of your clothes off, your shoes off, none of that. So you would get pushed in with the whole ritualistic statement of, I commit your sins to the waves. May you arise a better Thetan or some nonsense like that.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. And then you had to walk all the way to the garage on the other side of the property to quickly dry your clothes and get back to work.
Yes. Okay. So now, because Claire was in Religious Technology Center, there was housing that was sort of near the base, and we'll get over to there. So first of all, let's do another, I'll show you another thing here. There's a thing called the G units. It's not, that's not a rap group. It is these buildings down here on this side of the property. I'll zoom in on them here. They're like bungalows, and that's where celebrities used to stay if they came to the property, and that's where Tom Cruise used to stay. That's actually where Mitch Brisker used to stay too. He lived in one of these G units, was pretty much his unit for the entire time that I was there at the property. He just had a place where he always stayed, and it was all set up and hit. The fridge was filled with his food, and you know, that's just where he lived when he was here. And so that's the G units. And now this pretty much marks the very end of the property. Now, there's a tennis court here. This was all built and made really nice for when Tom Cruise was going to stay here. This is when all these were renovated and made very nice. And this is actually this field. there was a rose garden right here next to the, in between the tennis court and the G units. But there's this big wide open field right here. I don't know if you can see my mouse moving around, but in this area right here, this is this field that was planted with a bunch of flowers that was somehow that was made into, we were going to plant these flowers for Tom and Nicole to run through when they came to the property.
Right.
So yes, this is where this was all planted. This used to all just be dirt. But so now where we stayed, there's actually another place. And it was called Cinetown. And Cinetown was on the east side of the highway. And it was just called that because that's where a lot of people, these were all pretty much abandoned houses that Scientology purchased, but nobody lived in them until a bunch of the people in the cinematography division just started moving into them and fixing them up and getting the power turned on and just started fixing them up. And a bunch of people lived there. But then right across from that was what was called Sublet Road. And Sublet Road was where all of the religious technology staff stayed. So you can see there's this road. If you go, if we go back over here, there's the property again. There's the G unit, the G units. And then there's Cinetown. And then here's Sublet Road across the entire screen. Now, all of the houses along here started out just properties that were just owned by people that didn't have anything to do with Scientology. And over the 15 years that we were there, they eventually bought every single house along this road. And then that's where people that worked in Religious Technology Center and some people that worked in international management lived in these houses. And right in the middle, right where next where it says Sublet Road, there's a blue house. That was Danny Sherman, the L. Ron Hubbard biographer. He lived in that house, and that was called the Writer House.
Yep, that's right. And with the bright blue roof.
Yes, and if you go down the street a little bit, you can see this one here, and that is the Headley Birthing, and that's where we lived.
And along then, with a bunch of other staff. It wasn't, we just had one room in that house, but yeah.
That's right. There was, I think I want to say there was three or four bedrooms. And right next to us lived a guy named Rick Cruzen. And this is a key point that's going to come up later. But So you got the Headley, that's where we lived in this house right here. And then Rick Cruzen. And actually my sister lived in that house too. My sister also lived in the same house as this Rick Cruzen guy. And I think, again, that was like a three or four bedroom house as well. And so couples would stay in there. And some of these houses, if it was all females, then that was like an RTC female house where just females lived. And there might be six or eight girls living in a 3 to 4 bedroom house.
Yeah, not that anyone spent much time at any of these.
Yes, exactly. We weren't hanging out
like,
there. It was me.
Like your
it's
sister,
a place to sleep.
Yeah, your sister was our next door neighbor. I actually didn't even know that until you just said that just now. I didn't know that your sister lived next door to us.
You know what's so funny that, about that? Yeah. I've never been in that house. We lived next
neither.
Door for years. I've never, ever been into that house. I never saw my sister at that house. I never went and visited her at that house, ever.
Right. There wasn't a whole lot of visiting going on.
Okay, so.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
I guess
Love Food Kitchen said, was Rick cruising for a bruising?
He cruised for many bruisings.
Yeah.
The reason this is important is because Rick Cruzen had tried to escape from the Sea Org. There was at least 4 or 5 times that I was aware of that he tried to escape. He may have tried other times, but there was four to five times that I personally knew of where he either was trying to escape and he got caught, or he did escape and then he was caught and he was brought back. And when somebody leaves, when someone escapes from the international headquarters and they find out about it, they do what's called a blow drill. Where they activate a whole team of people. It could be anywhere from 50 to 100 people that are part of the blow drill. And these people are sent to find out where they went, or call their relatives, or contact the airlines, or check the local bus stations and call the taxi cab companies, all these things to try to figure out where this person went and how they got there. So my plan, took shape on January, the night of January 3rd. I tried to get a hold of Claire. I got home that night. I was told the next day I was going to go to the Rehabilitation Project Force. That's all you need to know. If you want to know the rest of the story, you can read it in the book, because that story will take as long as the escape story. So you were going to fast forward to the time right when I'm going to attempt to escape at the first part of this. Yeah. So I called Claire that night before. I want to say it was probably around 1 or 2 a.m. and I called you. You had a Nextel phone, so I could chirp. It was like a radio.
Radio. Where
you could go, cheep, cheep.
Yeah.
I chirped you and said, hey, you going to come home anytime soon? You said you were going to try. I said, hey, I really need to talk to you when you get home. And you were sort of non-committal. I'm going to try, but it's not looking good.
Right, exactly. And I hadn't seen you, I think, at that point since the New Year's event, which
exactly, it had been a few days.
We had gone to LA to the Shrine Auditorium towards the end of December. So now this was January 4th.
Yeah.
I remember you had tried to get me to go to Denny's in the middle of the night for my birthday,
for your birthday.
A couple of days before, and I couldn't go. How sad is that?
You couldn't go to Denny's at 3 a.m. on your birthday to go get it. Yeah.
But I hadn't seen you. I hadn't been home. Yeah. And as I remember, I was like, well, I'm going to see if I can at least come home and take a shower, which never happened.
Yeah. Okay. So you didn't come home, and I had already decided I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going to leave in the morning on my bike. And if Claire comes home, then I'm going to tell her about this plan. And if she doesn't, then I can't really tell her, because then she'll rat me out and then I won't make it and, you know, whatever. So,
yeah. And just as a comment, in the context of this story, I think we should note, well, let me ask you this, honey. How many times did we talk about, you and I talk about getting the heck out of there before you escaped?
Never once.
Yeah, exactly. Never once. We'd been married 13 years.
Yeah.
Never once did we ever discuss it, because it was forbidden to do so.
Well,
just
also,
in the context of this, I thought it would be good
sure.
to kind of
yeah,
highlight
we didn't
that.
Discuss it, and for good reason. So, because that could foil all successful attempts if either one of us ratted the other one out. So,
yes.
Okay. So I've decided I'm going to go. Now, the only thing I have to do, remember.
You got audio BTs coming.
What? You can hear them?
Yep.
I don't hear anything.
I definitely hear it. We'll see if the audience hears it in just a moment.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, that's much better. Now it's fixed.
Okay. Can you hear me? You good? Everything good?
Yep. Everything's
awesome.
Good.
Perfect. Okay. Remember when we went back? Let's go back over here for a second. So remember, you got this main booth here. So these guys, there's a security guard that's in this booth, and then there's a rover. And the rover is either on a motorcycle that drives around the base, or it's in the security SUV. Okay, so when I am going to leave from the birthing down here, all I have to do is make sure that I don't end up seeing that security SUV that's going to be here. And so my planned escape path was this. And I'll show you a view of this. There we go. So you can see where we live. Now, this yellow line gets me all the way up into Hemet here. Okay. And that's where I was trying to go. And I really didn't even know where in Hemet I was going to go. I was just going to drive to Hemet and then try to figure it out from there. So let's just see how far I got before they came. So here I am at the birthing. And now this is how far I got before they saw me. And
wait, where did you? Oh, yeah, there you go.
Why did they see me? Well, right where that red little thing, there was this, remember I told you about the security SUV Rover? It was parked in front of Rick Cruzen's house because he had tried to escape so many times that they thought he was going to escape the same night that I was planning to escape. So as soon as I drove my motorcycle through, literally opened the garage, drove out onto the road. And when I looked both ways to get onto the road, the security SUV was literally parked right there.
It's sad when you look at that little red line. Like,
yeah, that's how far
you got without being detected.
If you guys watched the last video where we showed you how we broke somebody out and we moved the Rover down here so we could break in over here, that was a result of this, okay? I knew that it wouldn't go well unless we planned it a little bit better.
Yep.
Anyway, so they pretty much caught me right off the bat, and they were chasing me, and they were literally just driving right behind me as I drove down this road. And then I'll show you the path that I made, and you can see here.
I just remembered one other thing too.
Yeah.
So you didn't get very far, but I think we should bring up the fact that security had cameras on the top of all those houses. So it's not like you were going to get much further, hadn't been under watch that morning. You just had really unfortunate luck on timing.
Yeah. So you can see that this is where there's a bridge right here in this area right here. There's where the yellow is kind of broken up. There's a bridge there. And so they were following me all along this yellow line. And then right after the bridge, the road kind of ends. And I'll show you, if you look this way, that's how far I got. And then this is where I crashed. And the reason I crashed is because if you go here on the road, so the shoulder sort of dead ends right where that red icon is. And so I was kind of driving on the side and they were driving in the main road right next to me. And as the shoulder ended, they didn't move over. They just kind of kept edging me off the side of the road. And then I just crashed. There's a fence there and I just crashed into the fence. And then that was it. So the security guard that was there, he's a guy by the name of Danny Dunnigan. And his nickname is Danny Done It Again because he's always getting into trouble. As a security guard, he's causing trouble. And so he jumped out of the SUV as soon as the bike crashed. He ran over to my bike and he took the key. So then I couldn't do anything. The bike was also a little messed up. My clutch lever snapped off and it was not doing well. But he took the keys, so I wouldn't have been able to do anything.
Did your suitcase fall off as well? Didn't you have a little suitcase on the back of the bike?
I did. I had I don't even remember. It was like the smallest little suitcase that would even fit on the back of that motorcycle.
Right.
And I had just thrown whatever clothes. Like my plan was to go to Kansas City. And in Kansas City, we're having a blizzard during this time. So I was like, I should probably bring some pants and a jacket. And I think that's some long sleeve stuff and whatever I could fit in this tiny little suitcase we had was in there. And so that flew off. It was just a big mess on the side of the road, but I was trying to get the key back from Danny. And when we were in the middle, the security SUV was essentially parked in the middle of the road because I was in the side of the road where there was like a foot of shoulder. And then the black Nissan Pathfinder SUV was in the street and we were fighting over the keys. Like I was saying, hey, give me my keys. And he was like, no, you got to come back. Okay. Somebody driving by saw that and called the police.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know this at the time, but that is when it happened. Okay, so then they have a police scanner in that SUV, and they heard the call. There's altercation in the road, on this road, a black SUV, motorcycle. Danny throws the key to me and jumps in the SUV, and they hightail it back to the base.
Yeah.
Okay, so I get the key. I put it in. I get my suitcase. I get The suitcase, I get that somehow secured to this. I have like a little rack. I get that suitcase on, and now the bike won't start. It has an electric starter. It will not start. It's flooded. So I'm trying to push it and trying to get it out. And then I realize, oh, the clutch is broken. So I have to somehow jerry rig it so I can get it into the right gear. And then somehow I get the bike going. That takes me probably 5 minutes at least. And right as I get the bike going, I find out I can only go 5 miles an hour. If I go any faster than that, it just dies.
And what was the speed it was capable of before that?
I could probably get up, you know, maybe 65 or 70. If I like really leaned into it and was going down a hill, I could get 70 on one.
Yeah, because it was a Yamaha TW200, right?
Yamaha TW200, that's right.
Yep.
Okay, so let's just see where I get here. Let me see if I can. I got to hide all these other icons, otherwise they'll bug us later. Okay, so where is it here? Here it is. Poof. Okay, so I drive. This is how far I got on the drive. I got that far. That's how far I got before the police pull me over.
Yeah. So and let's not forget, this was January and it was raining.
Yes.
To add insult to injury, right?
Yes. So the police are driving down this road here, going down the road, and they see me and they just flip a U-turn and then they're behind me and I'm thinking, oh great. It's not like we're going to have a high speed chase because I can only go 5 miles an hour. So, they could literally pull me over and still have the conversation and I wouldn't even have to stop the motorcycle. Yep. That's how slow I was going. So I just pull over right next. This actually was something else. I think there was like just a field here with some little huts before this was all cleared. But this is right around. I remember it was right before the college. There's a college that's right across the street here.
On the left, right? The San Jacinto College?
Yeah. So I remember when the police came, it was right around the college. And then I had pulled over like right after that. It was right in here somewhere.
Yeah. So how far do you think this is from Sublette Road? Like a mile, 2 miles?
Oh, I'll just zoom back out to it. You can see right here. You can see.
This is a sad state of affairs when all this has happened. And yeah,
there
you're not
it is
even...
right there. There's our birthing right there. I mean... But the crazy thing is that they're at the base. So they drove back here and they heard all this. And so we get back over to here where the encounter took place. And the police officer says, hey, how's it going? And I'm just like, it's great. Everything's good. Perfect. You know? And he's like, we got a call about an altercation on the road back there with a vehicle matching your description. And I was like, yeah, my friends were there. Some of the guys that I work with were just asking me some stuff. I'm going to see my dad in Kansas and, you know, trying to figure that out. And because
that's totally normal to have coworkers run you off the road when they have a quick question.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong there.
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nothing, nudge, nudge.
Nothing.
Oh my
fuzzy.
Gosh.
Anyway, so, He's basically trying to get like, hey, what's going on? And I'm just like, no, everything's good. Cause I don't want to cause any trouble so that I'm then in even more trouble than I'm already in. Cause I know they're going to hunt me down and I don't want to rat them out just yet. In hopes that I'm going to get out of here.
Yep.
Okay.
And
so
not to mention I was still at that property.
That's right.
During all of this.
And so the cop says, hey, listen, you got mud all over you and you know, the bike's a little messed up. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I've got it though. And then right about this point, a car pulls up next to us and it's a woman from the Int base. From the Sea Org, and her name is Muriel Dufresne. And Muriel, excuse me, Muriel rolls up and she goes, "What's wrong with Mark?" And I'm like, "Oh no, here we go."
That's out of the bag now.
and the cop recognizes her as working at Golden Era Productions. He knows who she is because she is the one who goes and gives the gift at the end of the year to the police league's fundraiser. And they have events for the police at the Golden Era Productions golf course and all this stuff. So the people in the town know who she is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, so he recognizes her. He already knows from the address on my driver's license that that's where I'm coming from. And then, and he just tells her, "Hey, listen, no, ma'am, everything's fine. We're in the middle of a traffic stop. Please move along." And then so she drives away and then he turns back to me and he goes, "Where are you trying to get to?" And I realize they're trying to help me at this point.
Yep.
So I go, "I'm trying to get to the U-Haul in town." He goes, "Okay, we'll get you there." So at this point, I know that he knows I'm trying to escape, and he's just trying to tell me he'll help me if I tell him where I'm trying to go. So he says, "Okay, we're going to get you there. You stay here right now because evidently there's some people trying to get you." He says, "It's very evident to us that they're trying to get you to reconnect with you and not let you go to where you're trying to go." So he says, "I'm going to have another car come so we can go in front of you and behind you and escort you there to the U-Haul." So I was like, okay. And at this point, there's also a question of, because I know that the security guards are buddy-buddy with the police.
Yeah.
Well, these guys are not Hemet police or San Jacinto police. They're Riverside County sheriffs. So mm-hmm. they're actually part of Riverside County. And so I don't know where they land in the friendliness in relation to the security people at the INT base. So I'm just hoping that they're not going to double cross me and then the security guys aren't going to be there at the U-Haul when I get there, or that right. they're going to tell them I'm at the U-Haul. But regardless, we're going together. And at some point, we're driving, they pull over another car, and I can see the cop in front of me is talking to the one in back of me, and he's motioning and he's he's making signals to the guy behind him, and I'm assuming they're on the radio. I don't know, but regardless, the car behind me pulls over a car and I can see that it's Bruce Wagner. And Bruce Wagner worked with Muriel in the port captain division, and he was the legal director, and she was the port captain, it's a Sea Org term they use whatever Sea Org installation, wherever it is, that's the port they're in. And the person that's supposed to interface with the local port is the port captain, as if they were in, when they went at sea, when they went to a specific harbor or port, that's the person that would deal with the locals in that port.
Yeah. So they were pretty much the, two of a handful of staff that had any interaction with the local people in Hemet and Gilman Hot Springs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so the police pull over Bruce Wagner. Now, as we keep going forward, we're going and we're trying to get to this. We're trying to get to this U-Haul, and then they end up pulling over Muriel, and they pull her over at this spot. And so they've already pulled over Bruce and told him, "Don't follow anymore." And now as we're driving forward, then they pull over Muriel and they say, "Hey, you guys can't follow us. You're not involved in this. You cannot be part of this."
Yep.
And I think at this point they tell them, "If you continue to follow, we're going to have to arrest you." And so I don't see any more after that. And then, so we get all the way to wherever the U-Haul is here. And you can see the U-Haul is all the way up here. And that compared, I mean, that's where I had to get to there Yeah. That's all the nonsense that I encountered.
Just to add a comment, obviously I'm covering my end of what happened after you escaped. But originally I was woken up, I was dozing on my desk. It was around 11:30 that day. And originally they were like, go get him back. We're taking, like, security was going to bring me to you because you were still super close to bring you back. And then within 10 minutes, I was told by Danny Dunnigan and Sue Wilhair, no, Mark called the police. He's gone to the dark side. He's an enemy now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also, if we want, let me just see if I can put this up. Can you have a copy of this you could read,
yep,
right?
Yep. So
this is the police. We actually have the police report. After I escaped, there was a guy named Anon Orange, and he was a protester in California that would go to the INT base, and he would protest as a member of Anonymous. And he called me and told me, or he might have called, I don't remember if it was through Jeffrey Augustine or somebody he contacted me through and said, hey, there's a police report of the day you escaped, but I can't get it. Only anyone who is related in the report or named in the report can get a copy of it.
Yeah, and this was 4 or 5 years after you'd escaped. Like, yeah. Had it not been for Anonymous, we never would have known even of the existence of this report, which is amazing. And you had actually already written your book when we got a copy of it.
We included this when we reprinted, or when we printed the paperback.
Yeah.
We first we came out with the hardback of my book. And when we came out with the paperback, we actually included the police reports. There's two officers. Remember I said there was one in front of me and there was one behind me.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So this is the report of one of those deputies. And if you want to read it, and then if you want to stop and we can make comments in between.
Perfect. And first of all, I just want to note that on the front page of the incident report, the crime that's reported is false imprisonment. Obviously, you didn't press charges. You were just trying to get the heck out of there. It's just revelatory that Riverside County Sheriff's Office absolutely knew what was going on here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So on Tuesday, January 4th, 2005, at about 11:24 hours, Corporal Williams was dispatched to a battery occurring at the intersection of State Street and Saboba Road in the unincorporated area of San Jacinto. Per the call, a passerby reported that 4x4 truck and a motorcycle were stopped in the intersection and several males were fighting. Corporal Williams had an extended drive from another area and requested myself and Deputy Clark respond to the scene to assist. As I was driving north on State Street at the intersection of Sagecrest, I saw a multicolored motorcycle driven by a white male adult wearing a blue helmet traveling slowly southbound.
That was me.
I advised Deputy Clark of the motorcycle so he could stop him, and I continued toward the scene to see if any other subjects were still there. As I approached the intersection, I saw a black SUV occupied by at least 4 white male adults wearing Golden Era security uniforms. The vehicle did a U-turn in the intersection and headed west toward the Golden Era property.
Oh, so they actually saw them when they... So I didn't realize that's how fast it was. So they were coming and they saw them take off and then they let me drive and then got me. So they were kind of casing it before they got there, or they just saw the tail end of what was going on.
Yeah. And plus they already had the report from the person that called it in. So they knew, you know, they had a heads up
on the way there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the vehicle did a U-turn. Okay, it was at that moment when Deputy Clark stated the subject on the motorcycle was trying to get away from Golden Era. I responded to Deputy Clark's traffic stop at the intersection of State Street and Ramona Expressway. I briefly spoke to Deputy Clark, who asked me to run a computer check on the driver of the motorcycle, Mark Headley. I then noticed a vehicle pulling up behind our patrol units. I contacted the driver, who identified herself as Muriel.
Yeah.
I recognized Muriel as an employee of Golden Era. Again, there's no other employees they would recognize.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Muriel asked if we had stopped Mr. Headley for not wearing a helmet. And I told her no. She then asked why we had stopped him. It's called Nunya, honey. Move along. Because she was concerned. I explained to Muriel that he was trying to leave Golden Era, and some of the Golden Era security guards were attempting to stop him with force. Muriel denied that occurred. Now, how would you know, Muriel?
Are you reading a different one than I thought? Oh, here we go. We're good. No, you're good. You're reading the right one. I just fast-forwarded to the second one.
Yeah. Just saying, how would Muriel know? She was not there when they ran you off the road. Muriel denied that occurred and stated everyone was free to leave the property. Muriel then asked if Headley had told Deputy Clark and I he wasn't free to leave. Oops, that was a faux pas, Muriel.
Yeah.
You just said everyone's free to leave, and now you're asking if Mark said he wasn't free to leave. Anyway, whatever. Okay, I'll keep reading.
Are you on the first page or the second page?
I'm on the first page.
Okay, good.
Well, yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm on line like 26.
Perfect. Okay, yeah. Good.
Okay. I advised her a passerby had called the police after witnessing the incident and after speaking to Headley. He corroborated what the witness saw. Muriel then got back into her vehicle and drove away. Deputy Clark informed me that he would escort Headley to the U-Haul business in the city of Hemet. He had asked to go to. A short time later, Deputy Clark informed me a small vehicle was following his patrol unit, and he was concerned for his and Headley's safety. That's crazy to me. I mean, you know.
Well, that they think something's going to happen. That guy's going to run us off the road or try to get to me.
Because now they've already seen the SUV that had at least four males in it. Then there was Muriel, and now there's another vehicle. So I can that was a well-founded concern. Just says a lot about the alleged PR area control that Muriel and Bruce had or had not established with the Riverside County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah.
I drove to the area the vehicle was last seen and located it parked in the driveway of Americana Mobile Home Park on State Street north of Fruitvale. I contacted the driver, who identified himself as Bruce Wagner with his California driver's license. I also recognized Bruce as an employee of Golden Era. I asked Bruce why he was following a deputy while he was in the performance of his duties. Bruce explained he was concerned for Headley because he left Golden Era on a motorcycle. I explained to Bruce he was coming extremely close to violating Section 148 of the Penal Code, obstructing, delaying, or resisting a peace officer in the performance of his duties. Bruce stated he did not want to do that. He again was just concerned for Headley. Bruce then asked me to tell him exactly what Headley had told me and Deputy Clark. I told Bruce, the conversation we had with Headley is none of his concern. However, if Headley wanted to tell him at a later time, he was free to do so. I told Bruce Headley was currently with the company of a deputy sheriff and was fine. Bruce agreed and suggested he drive the opposite direction so as to not cause any more trouble. I advised Bruce that would be a great idea. I drove to the intersection of Fruitvale and State and watched traffic for any more Golden Era employees following Deputy Clark and Headley. A short time later, Deputy Clark advised he had finished escorting Headley and was leaving. I cleared the area and continued my patrol duties. Refer to Deputy Clark's initial report for Headley's statement. This case will remain unfounded.
Okay, good. And then I'm going to just go to the next one and let you read that one.
Okay. Okay, so this is page 2.
Yeah.
Where it says details. On Tuesday, January 4th, 2005.
I'll be right back.
Okay. At about 11:25 hours, I was working as a uniformed patrol deputy sheriff driving a marked black and white police unit. assigned to the Traffic Services Division in the contract city of San Jacinto. At that time, I responded to the area of State Street at Saboba Road, reference a battery in progress. A passerby reported a 4x4 truck and a motorcycle were stopped in the intersection, and several males were fighting. While en route to the area, Deputy Linton advised seeing a motorcycle traveling southbound on State Street leaving the area. I located the motorcycle. Oh, that's appropriate. California license, mark 101. I forgot about that. Reference Depeche Mode to anyone who's curious. Near State Street at Ramona Expressway. I contacted the driver identified by his valid CDL as Mark Morgan Headley. I told Headley why I stopped him. Headley told me the following. Headley lives at Golden Era Productions on Gilman Springs and is leaving the property to visit his sick father in the hospital. Headley said several security personnel from Golden Era Productions were trying to, quote, persuade, unquote, him from leaving. Headley said, yeah, persuade defined as run him off the road. Different definition of persuade there than the real world has it. Headley said he was not injured and was trying to get to the U-Haul business on State Street in Hemet. Headley said he was concerned for his safety and asked if I would make sure he made it to the U-Haul business. Fair request. Thank you, Riverside County Sheriff's Office. I radioed dispatch and followed Headley southbound on State Street. While following Headley, I noticed a Honda Civic following very slowly directly behind my patrol unit. I noticed there was a male occupant driving this Honda and he was talking on a cellular telephone the entire time he was following me. I radioed Deputy Linton and asked him to stop the Honda. I continued southbound on State and arrived at the U-Haul 380 State Street, Hemet, with Headley at about 1200 hours. Headley said he was not injured and did not want to make a report, reference the incident. This case will be closed unfounded. And by the way, we should note that the officer, the commanding officer or whatever the position is called that was in charge of these officers that day, saw that Mark was married to me and therefore adamantly insisted that this report be created because of me, which was amazing to me.
Yeah. There's the U-Haul right there, too. You can see the... I don't know if you can see that. Oh, yeah, you can see on the trucks in the back there. There it is. That's the U-Haul. So, yeah, they
And by the way, someone's asking, did you ever thank those sheriffs? They did an amazing job. We never got to thank them personally, but I absolutely thanked Riverside County Sheriff's Office personally as a whole in person and told them I would not be there that day were it not for them.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah. The right here, if you can see my mouse there.
Yep.
That's where they were parked. And while I was inside, so when we got to the U-Haul, I it was a Yamaha TW 200 that was now had no clutch. And the carburetor, I think the carburetor was flooded when the bike fell over, it got flooded or something was messed up with the carburetor. And I was like, oh, I'm good. And they were like, let's get your bike in the truck and then let's get you driving away in the truck before we leave. So they waited there. And then because the bike was broken, my plan to drive all the way to Kansas on the TW 200 dual sport, it's called a dual sport. You can drive it off road, but it's also street legal. So it has turn signals and headlights and a taillight and mirrors.
And yours even had a license plate.
Which and mine was mine, registered mine and I had insurance.
Yes. Yeah.
And yeah. Claire had the exact same type of bike.
Just different colors.
If you're an executive at the international headquarters, you have to walk all over the property, and it's 500 acres. It would be like working at Disneyland and having to walk all over the park and doing that by on foot alone, you would not get any work done. You'd just be walking all day. So the people that had to get around the property all over had motorcycles. And my motorcycle was registered and street legal and had insurance that I paid like, you know, $75 a year for. And so I could drive it on the regular roads and on the highway if I needed to. And so they said, basically, get yourself a truck. So then I thought, okay. I called my dad and I said, hey, Dad, I'm leaving and I wanted to come stay with you if that was okay. And he was like, absolutely.
And didn't you call the 800 number that he had set up for you?
He had set up a 1-800 number for my sister and I so that if we ever needed to leave or if we ever needed to get a hold of him, that we could do it without having to pay to call him. So I could just dial this number that he would tell me and write to me. You can always call, you can always write. And
he maintained that until the day he passed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my sister.
Yeah.
And so he said, yeah. And I said, well, I was going to drive my motorcycle, but it's broken now, so I can't do that. And he said, I said, I'm at a U-Haul place. I can get a truck, but I need to somehow get to you. So he had a friend that lived in Los Angeles that he said I could put my bike with, and then she would give me a ride to the airport, and then I would fly out to Kansas. And so we went. So I had to go from here we are in San Jacinto all the way in this U-Haul. I had to get to the San Fernando Valley. I think she lived off of Ventura. And then there was a U-Haul place, return place in Calabasas, I think. Agora Hills.
Agora Hills, yeah.
And then I put the bike at her apartment. She drove to the U-Haul. I drove the U-Haul to the U-Haul. And then she picked me up and took me to the airport, which I ended up going out of Los Angeles International, LAX. And when I got there, my flight got canceled because of the snowstorm in Kansas. And so I think I ended up staying at a hotel right next to the airport that night. And then I got on a plane the next morning or something like that. And the whole time between leaving and getting on the plane, like even when I was at the hotel, I was like looking around to see if there was anybody and if there was, and because my dad booked the hotel. I don't remember the hotel. I think he might have booked the hotel, or I might have even just booked it with cash because I had gathered up enough money to leave, like a few $100s.
From my purse? You're welcome, honey.
From Claire's purse. Yeah, I went to go see her. When I went to go see her originally, I was like, hey, is Claire around? And they were like, no, she's in an interview with somebody. I was like, can I go to her office and just grab something from her purse? And they were like, sure. And they just let me in her office. I went in there. I was like, oh, she's got about $200. I think that'll help. Anyway. That's it. I got on the plane the next morning and then, I ended up meeting up with my dad at the airport. And then he actually lived in Lee Summit, Missouri at that time. Yeah. And so that is where I ended up living for the next 2 weeks until we busted Claire out. And hers was, we did a video where we talked about your escape, right?
I don't know. We'll have to check that. I don't think so.
I thought we did. I know you've told the story. I just don't know.
Yeah.
But I haven't. Anyway.
And now I'm filling in all the backstory in the process of writing my book, which has been interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, should we do a Q&A? Should we do answer some questions if people want?
Yeah, let's answer some questions.
Let me close all these windows I've got here.
Yeah, good idea. I saw that Jackson Gary Moorhead was in the house. I'm not sure if he's still here, but one time there, we should definitely do one where we talk about, break down with Jackson the nitty gritty of what is the blow drill step by step. I think that would be fascinating.
Okay.
Because it's insane. And yeah, Catherine Olson just commented, Claire should tell the story again. I am coming up on my 19th anniversary.
Yeah.
On
well, January if we haven't 24th. Done, yeah, if we haven't done a video, we should just do a specific video talking about that. We could do it with the graphics and all that stuff too.
Yes. And the Riverside bus station and the, what was the other one? Beaumont? Was it Beaumont?
Yep.
Yeah, Beaumont bus station,
yeah.
The Vegas bus station.
Yeah, we can do. We'll do that.
Showing how far they freaking tracked me across state lines. Yes,
Claire wants to do it all in this video right now.
No, I just had all the visuals popping into my mind. I'm like, oh yeah, that would be epic. Okay.
KM Cheesehead says, "You read the comments. I'll put them up. You can.
How was Serge's visit? Was Christmas amazing? Serge's visit was so awesome. I talked to Serge today and he was like, I hope I wasn't too much of a burden. I'm like, well, Serge, I hope you were not a burden one bit. Yeah. We loved having you. I hope you had the most amazing Christmas. He was like, I did.
That the
was
Serge we're talking first, about is Serge, yes, Serge Obolensky. That yes. The one that we, he was in the, we did a video, a documentary on him. It's just called The Story of Serge Obolensky. If you guys haven't seen it, we'll put a link in the description, but it's on the channel. And Serge lives in Los Angeles, but he didn't really have anyone he was going to be able to spend Christmas with. So we flew him out here to Colorado, and he stayed with us for the week of Christmas. Yes. And we did all kinds of adventures. Maybe I think we're going to do we're going to do a live next week. And when we do that, we're going to do a recap of the podcast stats and how well the Blow for Good podcast is doing. And we'll cover the YouTube channel statistics and all that stuff. And we'll put together a little bit of slides. I think we've got a few pictures we can show of some of the things we did. We'll put those up and we'll show you guys.
We have tons of photos. And Serge said it was his best Christmas and his first ever white Christmas as well, because it snowed while he was here. So he had a really, really good time. Went to his first Broncos game.
Yeah, we'll show a bunch of pictures. You guys are going to love that.
Okay. Jorge Vila in the house. Danny Dunnigan's call handle was Dad. What an asshole. Yeah, because he, among many other things, he definitely is not a dad. Yeah. What the heck? That's just wrong.
Oh, look, we got Denver Stevo.
Denver Stevo in the house. Happy New Year, Denver Stevo. Good to see you here. Cassie Isaac, Casey. Just saying thank you for continuing to do the hard work of exposing Scientology. You could have just gone to live a quiet, lovely life, but you've chosen to speak up and fight. Your work matters. Your story matters. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you very much, Cassie. Yes,
it's absolutely our passion to continue exposing Scientology and helping people get out. What better way to live out the rest of our days than to do something we're very well equipped to do, and also hold out hope that one of these days we will regain the many family members Mark and I have both lost to this evil cult.
Yeah.
Freezy new project of Farsec. Comment, that was really your license plate number, Mark?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
It was Mark 101. That's a Depeche Mode reference. I think I might even still have that license plate. And I do have, I sold the bike that I did escape on, that TW200. It was a 1995. Each model year of this motorcycle, they changed the color scheme and the decals and all that sort of thing. So if you have one, anybody who's familiar with the bikes, they can tell exactly what year it is just by the colors of it.
Yep.
So I had a 1995, and after we escaped and we moved back to Los Angeles, I ended up selling the motorcycle to Universal Studios to shoot the movie, The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. And they actually completely took the bike apart and painted it and did all this other stuff, not realizing that they were renting the motorcycle from me. So I had rented it to them for some insane amount per month for so many months so they could use it. And then they were going to give it back. And then after so many months, we were like, hey, what happened to the bike? And then they said, oh, we ended up destroying it in the shooting. And so we're going to buy it from you. And I don't remember what they paid, but it was many, many, many times over what I had originally purchased the motorcycle for. Yeah. But then I was very sad that I didn't have it anymore. And so after we moved to Colorado, I found the exact same year bike that had very little miles on it. And so I have, essentially, I have the exact same bike again. And it's parked right on the side of my house. And I go riding with it. All of the boys have been on it, and we go for like Sunday rides in the nice weather.
Yep.
So that answers all of the motorcycle questions.
Yes. There we go. Thank you, Freedom 35, Pedrick. Peter Anderson, question, off-road knobby tires or street tires?
It had knobby tires that were street worthy as well.
Yep.
A lot of motorcycle stickets.
Yeah.
Stickers or questions.
Well, this is a motorcycle themed story after all. Office of Spoofed Affairs. Thank you so much for the super sticker. We appreciate it. And I love the name.
Yeah. I think he might have messed up because that's another one at a totally different time.
Okay.
Thank you, Office of Spoofed Affairs. That's a very generous of you tonight here.
Bruce Nielsen, did Scientology bulldoze your house and all the houses around in Gilman Hot Springs?
Yes, they did. There's none there anymore. If you go on Google Earth or Google Maps or whatever it is and go to Gilman Hot Springs and look along the golf course, there's nothing there anymore. They bulldozed all of those houses. They bulldozed that whole Cinetown area. And they also bulldozed the older houses on the property, such as the old Gilman house and the maintenance man house and the M&M house and whatever other of these really, really old structures that were there from the original Gilman Hot Springs resort. They did bulldoze all those as well.
Yes, Sandy Del Rey. I was lucky enough to meet you two and your dad at HowdyCon Denver. He was a very sweet person. Oh, that's amazing, Sandy. She even,
her icon is the HowdyCon badge.
Oh, that's right.
I have one of those. I have so many photos.
Yeah, that was a memorable event. That was the first time I did the early draft of my TED Talk. And there was a ton of people there. It was good. It was fun. Thanks for being there, Sandy. Denver Stevo, question, does OSA still smell like poo? Answer, yes. Great to see you both. Your stories and laughter always make me smile. Thanks for being here, Denver Stevo. We wish you a happy new year. 2024 is going to be a really good year.
Yes.
Anna Reynolds, care for JC YouTube. The audio in Mark's voice is great, but when you get to the end, it does get very, very emotional for the listener. I blubbed. Yes.
Oh, she's talking about the audible version of the book. Yes.
Yes, which Mark recorded. And yes, Metalhead at Claire, what would happen if they would have taken you from that bus stop? Would you get sec checked and be back on your post? Great question. I've often thought about that. It's honestly, despite all odds, that they didn't succeed in getting me back. Thank goodness. Yes, I would have been sec checked. I was actually already in the hole at the time that I escaped. I'm sure the bars and security measures that came after I had escaped were handlings for the fact that I was able to get out of there. I would have been under lock and key for a very, very long time. So thank goodness that didn't happen.
Yep.
Yeah. Shelley, wait, you did a TED Talk? I will have to look that up. So I didn't do a TED Talk.
She wrote one.
I auditioned for a TED Talk, and I was going to do a TED Talk, and then COVID happened. So one of the very first Scientology Stories videos that I did, I think it's number 4, I just did it as a YouTube video. I know it's kind of cheating, but you know, I have a lot going on. So it was kind of an easy way to get out there what I intended to get out there without doing, maybe one day. We'll see. Never
say make a note, right? And put a link into it in the description of this video. So if you want to look, there'll be a link in the description. Yeah. Claire's wannabe TED Talk. Colonel Brock
it's about growing up in Scientology and
yeah. Colonel Brock says, Claire, where's your son's portrait painting?
Oh, it's still behind me. You just can't see it.
Oh,
right?
Here we go. Here. Oh, I see. You got to do that.
Yeah, there you go. It's right there. Jefferson Hawkins in the house. Happy New Year, Jefferson. We used to call Danny Dunnigan Barney Fife after the Don Knotts character on the Andy Griffith show.
Danny was such a, oh my
god. Do you remember
goodness.
When he had that really nasty motorcycle accident and he had to hold his arm like this for like 6 months and he had screws coming out of it and this whole thing?
The amount of adventures Danny got involved in, and always, he's in my book actually a bunch, Danny is, because he was like,
appreciate your sense of humor like I did.
His sense of humor lacked two things, sense and humor.
Yes, but
Danny is in my book a lot. There were many interactions with Danny over the years.
Okay, sorry. Hold on. I'm just going to note a comment real quick because I want you to talk about it. Okay. Free Xenu Project of Farset comment. Mark, little did Universal Studios know that that bike was going to later become famous years later in history for escaping a cult. Isn't that true? Good point.
You know, somebody told me that I don't remember if it's in a DVD or there's some Fast and the Furious video that the bike is in. It's like a black and gray camo Yakuza bike. It's a Japanese gang bike in the movie. But I think it's at Universal. I think there's a Universal Studios Japan or something. I don't know. Somebody told me that it's still around somewhere or it's somebody has it.
Yeah.
So who knows? We'll never
Not
know.
That it was a very successful escape bike. I mean, come on now.
I did get it fixed and I did drive it all the time until I sold it. I mean, they used it in the movie. It was a working motorcycle when they had it.
Yeah. Susan B. Mark has done a great interview, I guess you call it, in Germany with Jason Begay. Yes, I spelled wrong, I think. Chicago PD. Anyway, fantastic.
Yes, I did do that.
I'm going to make a note to link to that as well.
Perfect. Yeah. It was a government symposium that took place in Germany that was put on by Ursula Kuberta from Hamburg. And we went and we spoke to delegations from many European countries that had come there to hear about Scientology. We actually did it. I did it on two different occasions. I did once with Jason Begay of Chicago PD and Chicago Fire fame because he used to be in Scientology and we shot a ton of films with him at Golden Air Productions. And then his
interview that he did with Mark Bunker is pretty famous from the early days of Scientology.
And we should get a Mark Bunker on. We can talk.
Yeah,
about
we this. Already had talked about that. Yes.
But Mark Bunker had shot this footage with Jason Begay and he needed to edit it. And he needed an editing system, like a high-end editing system that he could all load it into and edit it. And I actually owned and had one of those systems set up in my shop in Burbank. And so he came and edited that video at my company in Burbank that ended up going on. And that video, I want to say, it likely has over a million views by now that Jason did at the time was sort of a bomb being dropped on Scientology because Jason was one of their poster boys in the celebrity community. He didn't have his own TV show or anything at the time, but he eventually did get that after leaving Scientology. He became even more successful in the kind of TV acting world. And so that was tons of fun. Somebody said, ooh, pink.
That was some nonsense in the chat, which I think Catherine took care of. So thank you, Catherine.
This is the one I was trying to click.
That was for JC great. YouTube. That was a great lecture in Germany. Yeah, there you go.
That was the one I was trying to hit. Here, Dr. X.
Dr. X, congrats, Mark, on your escape anniversary. Glad Serge had an awesome Christmas with his chosen family. What would stop people who had vehicle access at the Imp base from escaping when going to events? Happy New Year to all. Oh, I have a great answer to that question.
Yeah.
Most of the vehicles that we drove to the events belonged to Scientology, and we all knew that they would throw us in for Grand Theft Auto in a heartbeat if we tried that.
Yeah,
but there was one couple that drove to Gilman Hot Springs, Hemet. Jackson would know. Well, actually, this was after he had left. But either way, they parked it and left it in the lot in some random parking lot, and then got on a train or a bus or something. But yeah, very few people owned personal vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very, like, I would say under 30 out of almost 1,000 people there. There were maybe 30 vehicles. And of those 30, maybe even half of those that were street legal, registered, operational. Like, sometimes your car, you wouldn't use your car so long. By the time you'd go to get it and drive somewhere, all the tires would be flat because you hadn't moved it in 6 months or eight months or a year or whatever.
Yeah, because nowhere security to go. Security would take the keys the second you got in any trouble. So you'd not be allowed to drive. So, or if you were in a lower condition or had anything going on, you would not be allowed to drive. So it was rare that any staff members drove personal vehicles, and it became more and more rare as the years passed by, because it was, you know, those few that did have vehicles, when they wanted to GTFO, as Mark says, they used said vehicle to try and do that.
Susan B.
At Mark. Jason had a lot to say then. Great, great. I've watched everything I could find. My first introduction to SPTV. Nice.
Yes,
absolutely. What, Ingrid K., whatever happened to Jason?
Jason told his whole story. He did a ton of videos. He went to Germany with me. He went to New York. He spoke at a bunch of anonymous events. And then once he told his story, and there was nothing more to say. And then he ended up getting a hit TV show that he is the main character of. And he's been doing that ever since. And I'm pretty sure that keeps him as busy as anything could keep you. Yeah. But I talked to him a few months ago, and he watched the Surge video. He sent me a message after he watched the Surge video, and he said that he liked it. And I was like, yeah, come on home. We'll talk about some of our adventures. But he hasn't come on.
Busy. Free Xenu Project of Farset comment. Hot tip, if you're going to blow in a Scientology vehicle, go to an old-time junkyard and pay them to get rid of them like in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I don't know about that. That might not be the best the best idea I've ever seen. You know, I wanted to – we had that comment from Dr. X. We have some pictures of the stuff that we got, right, when Serge came here, because didn't Dr. X send him a package too?
Yes.
Dr. X sent a package.
I don't think I took pictures of it now that you're saying that.
I know.
But yes,
we'll see. But Serge loved the gift that you sent Dr. X.
The hat.
We were taking a lot of pictures of everything, but he got a ton of stuff, Serge. A ton of people had sent stuff to us.
Liz Ferris and Carrie sent money, and we got him a whole ton of art supplies.
We'll show the pictures. But he got a lot of stuff. And I just wanted, before I forgot, I wanted to say thank you, Dr. X, because
he really, really appreciated it. He was like, wow, this is for me?
Yes.
Wow.
He was very excited about the project. Yeah. Did we miss any other comments? If you can go through, I'll do these banners, but we try to do these before on each time we do a video before we end off. We try to cover all the bases here. We are selling a ton of merch in the BFG merch store. If you guys haven't seen, we've got Xenu is My Homeboy shirts and Hail Xenu shirts and mugs and mouse pads. And we also have in the SP shop, We have fake Navy dolls, bobbleheads, Mike Rinder bobbleheads, and SP bracelets. And you can go to the spshop.com. And the spshop.com, there's also like Aftermath. Is it Aftermath? There's shirts and t-shirts and stuff like that as well.
Yes.
That you can get. All the proceeds from the spshop.com go to supporting the Aftermath Foundation. If you guys want to get a copy of my book, Blown for Good, where we talk about all of the escape that we covered tonight, all of the excruciating details that led up to it, and then every little part of it, you can go to blownforgood.com, or you can also go to the merch store, the BFG merch store, link in the description. You can get it there as well. Did I forget anything else? Oh, and if you want to support the Aftermath Foundation, you can just go directly to the aftermathfoundation.org, and there's a donate button there. You can also sign up to be a volunteer if you don't have any money to donate, or you don't want to support financially. We have people that volunteer for the Aftermath Foundation. If you just have a car, you can take somebody to the airport that's trying to escape, or you've got a spare room somebody could stay in, or whatever it is. We're going to do at some point we'll do an update on this, but we have got a whole bunch of database stuff that we're putting together for the Aftermath Foundation that we can track.
And newsletter and with all kinds of amazing news of things now in place, including some of our collaboration with law enforcement efforts and a lot of good things happening on that front as well. And people helping people get out every single week.
Yeah. So that's very cool. And yeah, that's what's happening with all that good stuff. And I think that's it. Is there anything else I need to cover?
I think that covers everything. I'm doing a final check for any last questions. Yep. That covers it for today.
Nice. Well, it was good to see you guys again. Tune in, like, subscribe. If you are listening to this on our Blown for Good podcast, be sure to give us a rate and a like on whatever podcast app you're listening to. And if you guys, we're going to cover this in the live next week when we do the recap, but we're in right now on the platform that we're on. The Blown for Good podcast was in the top 5% of over 100,000 podcasts. And so we're going to show you guys where the most people are listening and the most people are signing up and what they're listening on and where and what the episodes are the most popular ones. We're going to do a whole recap of the podcast probably next week. But if you want to get into those statistics, sign up for the podcast and you might make it into the summary. We'll see. I don't know exactly how it adds all that stuff up. But yeah, that's what we got. And
Shout out to Catherine Olson, our mod. Thank you, Catherine. We appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Catherine. Awesome, guys. Well, until next time.
Bye.